Welcome to Goals Question Time, where I interview leading executives driving innovation, venturing, and strategic change.
This is the second part of a session we did with Tony Askew of REV Ventures. In part one, he discussed the setup and processes for running an effective corporate venturing unit for over 20 years. Tony, can we move on to now post-COVID? You know, the world is from 2020, or when you set up, so from 2000 when you set up to the end of last year, was, you know, you had the dot-com crisis, you've had 9/11, you've had the financial crisis. We're now in another phenomenal one, which is like 9/11 and a financial crisis, as I sort of put it, happening in every country in in every month going sort of forward. I think we can sort of see at the moment. So what's your experience at the moment with the ventures that you've invested in and the triage in them?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think we put in the notes of this that, you know, there are kind of three main buckets I would group this in. The first one is managing the LP, which I think is very important for any venture fund during this kind of period. They need to know how you're thinking about capital allocation and what to expect during that period. The second thing is how you are thinking yourselves about the investments in the portfolio and what their capital needs are going to be. And then thirdly is how you enact those involvement with those companies. And they are, I think those are sort of three different layers, but all sort of caught in the same conundrum. And before you kind of can do anything, I think in these periods, you have to sort of, as a partnership group and as a team, recognize that those are the three main issues that you're going to be wrestling with in order to stabilize the base. And until you've stabilized the base and understood kind of what your house response is going to be, it's then very hard to do anything more than that. It's hard to do much origination. It's hard to do how you're going to manage the portfolio. So if I break those three things down, and I think this kind of depends on your relationship with your LP, and we have a different experience set to some others because we have been with the same LP for 20 years, and we are a very well understood entity. And if I think of Jesse, where you are, you know, you're thinking of how you're going to create something. So I think you have to sort of think about what relationship you have and what expectations they would have going in. So for us, I think that piece was a relatively quick exercise, because I think we've been through a few downturns with our LP, and they've seen how we've responded and we've seen how they've responded. And RELX, we're fortunate with RELX, it's a very well-run, thoughtful entity that understands really how to invest over the long haul. And so we've had to, good conversation with them about what this period will mean in terms of how we're going to operate. So we've actually more focused on how we're thinking about capital allocation with them, rather than talking through what it's going to be like to go through a downturn, because we've kind of really do understand how that's going to affect them. And they've been making various releases to the the announcements to the public market over the last few weeks about that. So if I move on to how we're thinking about the portfolio, we very early on, probably about a month and a half ago now, we started to see that we were coming into a difficult time, and we started to look across the organization, across the portfolio. And really the main thing is, as I'm sure you all know, is looking at the cash needs of the portfolio. And that's really taking a no holds bar approach to each of the portfolio companies, thinking about how much capital they're going to need for the year, what their plan going into the year was, how that plan will need to change, and then touching base regularly with those companies to make sure that you get a good understanding of how that view is evolving. And that sort of comes into that third point bucket there, which is why all this is interrelated, which is how you interact with your companies. And I think probably the easiest way to get to how you manage your portfolio is to think first about how you manage each of your companies. And you've probably got one of three relationships with a company: either you're a board director, a board observer, or you're or you're an investor without either of those former two rights. If you're a board director, and I know you've got Neil on next week talking about a director's responsibilities, but you do have some very strong and clearly demarcated responsibilities around fiduciary duty and duty of care, which you need to be really focused on with those companies as you're thinking through your response as a fund. And sometimes your response as a fund is going to need to be different to how your response as a director will be. And this comes in, and I'm sure you'll touch on that a lot next week, so I don't really want to presage anything or steal any thunder. But there could be circumstances in which what you know needs to happen as a board member, you know that it's not going to be at top of the list as an investor for you to be doing. And I think that can in these periods of time cause tremendous stress and tension, particularly if the way that in which you define the corporate fund is more strategic than the way we are. So for us, it's the way we resolve that is very straightforward. We're always on the side of our companies. Our whole structure is as a venture investor. So we are constantly always only thinking about our role in the companies is to do best for all shareholders. So that's why I say you come back to kind of some of your structural decisions early on in how you set the stall out for your venture program will I think have a big impact on how you are able to behave with your companies during this process.
So I agree that's a really good important point, just to re-emphasize that behavior of you being on the board, you being the GP of that fund, and then the investor being sort of arm's length. It gets very muddled when corporates are just investing off the balance sheet from a budget, and especially if the person that's on that fund sort of side has come from a corporate background, not the sort of depth of experience you've got with, you know, you saying you're a VC. And I think that's a really important sort of distinction to think that, oh, it's okay just to change your hat. And, you know, the image we're going to be discussing next week with Neil, we've got this sort of head office image, and we've got the image with the startup, and the person on the board has sort of got their legs split across these sort of two areas. And I think it's really important, as you sort of say, your image is you're sitting around the table with that startup, rather than having to think about what your employer at head office is saying. So I think we shouldn't, that's why I wanted to re-emphasize that. I think it's a really good point you make there.
Yeah, and that's why I don't want to take anything from Neil's talk next week, but it is that the most important thing to consider as you go through this is you've invested in usually the entrepreneur has only got this in their portfolio. You've got many other companies in their portfolio, and you need to be very sensitive to what is happening in that company, because that company will live or die based upon some of the decisions, potentially the decisions that are made over the next 3 to 6 months of a downturn. And you've got those. So I think it does change across those three roles of investor to board member, with the observer being this sort of nasty. I always think the observer is a bit of a nasty halfway house. But, you know, as an investor, you can, just a pure investor, you have no fiduciary or duty of care obligations. So, you know, technically you could respond very differently. But what I would say is all the VC community would echo this, is your reputation as a VC is more made during a downturn than it is when things are going very well. Because what people want to know is, how do you respond when things get rough? It's very easy to respond well when things are going well, when all boats are rising. It's very different than when the hard decisions have to be taken. And when the hard decisions have to be taken, the entrepreneur wants to know, Are you with them? Are you in the parlance a fellow traveler? Are you looking to find solutions? Are you helping the company, or are you being difficult? Are you Are you planting an agenda that nobody else can see? You know, are you on the side of the entrepreneur? Well, also where it comes down to, on the side of the company rather than the entrepreneur, I should say. So yeah, I would say that during this period, as you're working with your companies, your reputation will either be enhanced or challenged. And you used to have that at the back of your mind. It doesn't mean to say you do exactly what the CEO says or what other investor director says. What you do is you make the choices that are right at the time, balancing all of the inputs that are right for the shareholders, that are right for the company and the stakeholders broadly, and not one individual agenda. And yeah, if you follow that, then you're on the right track. So I think that's the interaction you want with your companies very early on. And then as a portfolio, then that's where you could have some different conversations, because you're going to go across, as the whole point of triage is to understand where the problems lie in the portfolio. And you'll probably end up, as you triage a portfolio, you'll have those that will weather the storm or thrive. And as we're finding in our portfolio, we've got a few companies that are very well exposed to e-learning and remote working and those kinds of things. And there's, you know, suddenly an uplift in demand for those companies. I'm sure that will come off once COVID's over, and that'll be its own problem. And you've got other companies at the other end of the spectrum in any portfolio that will require some more cash to get through it. So as you triage, you need to really think about how, which bucket these companies are going in, and then how you are going to respond, and be very clear in how you're going to respond, and be honest and real with each other about what that's going to mean in terms of time, in terms of capital, and in terms of supporting the company through potentially some pivots in pricing and strategy and those kinds of things.
And you are going out doing origination of looking for new investments. That's going to be quite a shark fest or a thing in that at the moment, Tony. What's your view on doing origination in the current base, if you're coming in without knowing a bit of background about the entrepreneurs you might be investing in, a bit more about their track record, or who else you're going to be investing alongside? It's a bit of a challenge coming in at this origination stage, wouldn't you say? Even though deals might be great and talent might be available now.
Yeah, I think there's a couple of components to that. I think it's a very good point, actually, because I think on a chemistry level, you need to have met the team if you're going to back the team as a VC. And I don't think that is going to suddenly shift to 100% online meeting. Yeah. And so if, as an investor, you haven't spent time face-to-face with not just the entrepreneur, but the team, I don't think those deals are going to get done. Now, that will therefore mean a number of things. You know, maybe there's an opportunity within a social distancing regime to do that if you're a local investor. I think that can happen, and undoubtedly that's what will happen for more kind of maybe earlier stage local investing in particular. And Silicon Valley, everyone is in kind of similar place. Yeah. And you can imagine that people can get together. I think where it becomes much harder, and definitely for funds like ours, where we are typically investing in cities that we don't live in, that creates a blockage naturally. And I think a lot of corporates are in that situation. And indeed, these days, a lot of funds are in that situation.
Yeah, yeah.
And then I think there's a very sort of human chemistry component. So I'd put that into, if you haven't already met the teams and already know them and already know the entrepreneurs, I think that's a big challenge to origination in this market. Now, what you can do is you can fill the top of the pipeline. So you can do a lot of meet and greet, which is what I'm doing. I'm still seeing the same number of folk at the top of the pipe. There's at some point you can't move to that stage where you say, right, well, we're gonna meet and get together. But there's a second problem at the moment. And that's it. We're just coming into the tumbler. You know, at the end of last year, we're at the end of a very big bull run. It was a very frothy market. You'd have to pay up. You know, the question was, how many quarters ahead of the performance are you really going to pay for? the rules of the game around what SaaS multiples were. You know, they were in a range, but you kind of knew what they were.
Mm-hmm.
Even coming into the first part of Q1, you were there. Right now, I think that is up in the air. How do you value a company?
Yeah.
During this crisis, and it's not a question of how you get value. It's like where do you peg it? You know, is it going to get worse? Is it going to get better? Is it going to get better then worse? Is it going to get worse then better? You know, it's that whole curve thing.
Yeah.
And I think you add that component of how you're going to price it and how you're going to get comfortable with the risk. So, you know, as you're looking at pipelines and moving off to the right, if you're talking about selling $100,000 plus software, it's definitely taking a lot longer for the same reason, because, you know, to originate in software sales, you have to, often technical teams have got to get together and those kinds of things. So there's some complication there. And I think right now, as we're talking kind of in April, is about probably the worst month, because it's all kind of happening around us. We're not sure when stuff is going to get unlocked. We're not sure, you know, how different states in the US and how different countries in Europe are going to respond. You know, we're not sure whether this is going to be 2 months more, 3 months more, 6 months more. So I think there's a lot of uncertainty. I suspect as we go through and this sort of settles down, then that sort of deal making pricing component of it might become clearer, you know, as the market settled in. I mean, we've seen the volatility in the public markets. We've got the same volatility in private markets, and the same thing's happening with M&A. So I think as far as I can tell, those things that were already in process with bona fide high quality funds have closed on the terms that were negotiated before the crisis. I think the harder thing is establishing the basis of terms over the next few months is going to be a lot harder. So those two things are going to be a natural elongation to the origination cycle, and perhaps even full delay.
Yeah. Another layer I'd put on top of your origination point, there's that personal contact with the team. But you know, you know, in your experiences, you probably heard about that entrepreneur or that person 6 months ago because they were pitching at some other event, but it was a bit too early. And also the other dynamic, I think, is that you've been around this space for some time. So you know the people you've invested with in Seattle and Silicon Valley for some time. So if one of them contacts you and says, oh, look, there's a guy in my backyard now who's really good, and they're doing a bit of a down round, or they're ready to take off in this bit, you will have that conversation with them. And if you're coming in new to this, you haven't got that ecosystem of, have I done a deal with these guys before, or have I not done a deal with them, but I like them and I trust them, and if they're going to bring me something in, you know, to put into the top of my hopper, I will spend some time looking at it. I think there's that as well. I think corporates who are new to this don't understand, because they come at it from I'm just going to get another supplier and I'll just put them through this churn that I do when I'm getting a supplier or a consultant.
Well, of course, that last point, I think that venture investments and venture origination is not the same as supplier origination.
Tony, we really appreciate your insights and perspective you've given with this.
Thank you for joining us, and do subscribe to the podcasts or to the videos and look at any of our resources. Feel free to drop us an email or a message and be very happy to follow up. Thank you.